Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Rebel Convo. And if we could afford to have girls with show cards telling you what round it was or what episode it was, we'd have that. But unfortunately, we do not have that sort of budget, so you'll just have to believe us when we say it's probably about episode 43 or 44. What do you think, Laura?
Give or take, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, give or take. I mean, give some people we probably would rather not have interviewed. Take a few that turned us down. It's probably about 43 or 44.
Sure.
Yeah. So, today, this is interesting. We're back-to-back shows. We didn't skip a week. We did a show last week with Guillaume and Jenna of Tiny House Giant Journey. And this week we're having a show as well. We've got an interview guest who's probably lined up, and right now they're probably trying to figure out what exactly we may possibly want to talk to them about. And if they're listening, well, that's stupid. This is not live radio, so they're not listening. But if I could give them a hint, we're going to ask them about tiny houses.
That's amazing. I can't believe we're going
to
do that.
Well, you know, I like to give people a good heads up on things. That's what I like to do. So Laura, what's happening in your neck of the woods? My neck is really dull, to be quite frank, but what's happening in your neck?
In my neck, well, fall is happening here, so it is absolutely gorgeous in the mountains, but that also means we're going to start packing up and head into town for the winter. Mm-hmm. Because of our kind of off-the-grid tiny house situation.
Right.
We sort of built it so we could travel during the winter months.
But also because y'all are Little House on the Prairie fanatics, and you're taking after the second and third book where Charles moves the family into town because the winter's supposed to be really, really rough with blizzards.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Great. Just wanted to make that connection for the folks at home. Now, do you fancy yourself to be like Little House on the Prairie? I mean, does Matt walk around smoking a pipe and wearing some sort of moccasin boots made out of what looks like beaver pelt?
And playing the fiddle? No, there's really, besides my first name, we have nothing in common with Little House on the Prairie.
Well, that's good, because hate to break it to people, but he was an alcoholic, and she grew up to have some horrible post-market surgery done, and then also lost in the second round of Dancing with the Stars. So, you know, I'm okay with that. Totally okay with it.
And there, folks, is some tiny house history for you.
There's some tiny house history that you won't find in textbooks anywhere, ever. Look, Michael Landon did go on to have a great career, though. I mean, come on, he did, what, Seventh Heaven? That was a fantastic show. I mean, that was like, where would the Lifetime channel be without Seventh Heaven?
I don't have an answer for that question.
Well, I mean, it would probably be the Oprah Network. We saw what happened to that. So thank heaven for Seventh Heaven. Laura, I feel like I'm in an especially good mood today. Yeah, there's no response. I don't expect a response to that, because who cares?
There really isn't.
There really is not. No, I do want to say, you know, last week when we interviewed Guillaume and Jenna, it really was probably, I'm gonna stick my neck out here and say it was probably our most popular show. We had a tremendous amount of listens and downloads, a lot of Facebook activity, a lot of Google Plus activity, a lot of blog activity. Their story really seemed to resonate with a lot of people. I think a lot has to do with the fantastic photography that he brings to the whole package, as well as Jenna's really kind of funny storytelling and writing. So, and just her kind of dry wit. So, they were a great couple to have on the show, and I look forward to seeing how their project escalates.
Yeah, it was fantastic to talk to them, and I'm excited to hear that that was a really popular recording podcast thing that people like to download. It proves that people are actually listening to what we have to say.
That's the scary part. There are people listening to what we're saying out there.
that means we can... Do we have to be careful about what we have
well,
to say?
Well, I think
we just say whatever we want?
I honestly think there does come some certain sort of moral obligation, as well as ethical obligation, to us leading the people, so to speak. You know, although, in the case of Orson Welles, had he never duped literally hundreds of thousands of people, he would not be the name that he is today. Neither would he have achieved funding to do the sort of movies that he did later in his career. So
right.
There's a lot to be said for people who are willing to choke a chicken by the chain.
I think that's a fair point. And now it makes me want to do some sort of like War of the Tiny Houses.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. That'd be fantastic. What I would like to start some sort of tinfoil hat conspiracy theory that the POTUS has outlawed all homes under 2,000 square feet. And if you live in one, the National Guard will show up and burn it to the ground and take you to a sort of refugee camp in the middle of, like, North Dakota.
Wow, that could instill some serious panic.
It could. But then it could also cause a major revolution, and then if it did, people would be wearing our faces on T-shirts, like Che Guevara. Except I fancy us to look more like Napoleon Dynamite and his sidekick, like holding cans of beer. That would probably be our T-shirt.
Right. But regardless of whether or not we start a revolution, that would actually just be our logo.
Yeah, and that would be fine. That would be fine. You know, it just say. So, Laura, you said that that y'all are, you know, preparing to kind of make your trek in for the winter, that sort of thing. I want to ask you this question, and then I think we're going to move on to an interview, but I do want to ask you this question. We're coming to a very interesting part of the season. Now, if you haven't noticed, all of you out there in listener land, as well as you, Laura, and I think companies went overboard with pumpkin spice this year. You know, it's one thing for Starbucks to have the best drink ever made in the world, which is the pumpkin spice latte. I'm all for that. But I mean, seriously, pumpkin spice M&Ms? I saw those. Pumpkin spice M&Ms. There was pumpkin spice this and pumpkin spice that. And, you know, every brewery decided they were going to do some sort of pumpkin spice this year. And, you know, you have to be delicate with the pumpkin spice. It's not something you can just throw around carelessly in the wind like your great-great-great Aunt Edna's ashes or something. You have to be delicate with this stuff.
So I agree. It was a little overboard, I think, for a lot of it.
Yeah, so my question to you is this, Laura. Where do we go now? Where do we go with beers? What do we have to look forward to?
So this is that portion of the podcast.
For just a second, I just want to know, what do we have to look forward to? I want the listeners out there to know that just because they can't get their little Sam Adams pumpkin brew anymore doesn't mean it's the end.
No, that is true. And what you want to look for are winter warmers. They're delicious dark beers with high alcohol content, and they're great for the winter.
Interesting. Well, you know what I'm doing. I'm headed straight to Mother Earth Brewery, where I'm going to pick up their seasonal, which is supposed to be a really beautiful blend this year. And I'll be tasting it on November 5th. I mean, not November 5th, November 15th. I'll be going to the tasting, and I will let you know what it tastes like. And if it's any good, I might package some up and send some your way. Not that you couldn't buy it in Western Carolina, but because you couldn't buy it with love in Western Carolina.
That is very true. I would never refuse a gift of beer.
There it is. There you
have it. And also go out to the airwaves.
There you have it. So, ladies and gentlemen, today on the show, we are interviewing our friend Stacy Whitcomb, who has become infamously famous for her Just a Smidgen broadcasts on YouTube.com. She is building, or has built, a very interesting tiny house. She's currently living in it. She is also the third Idahoan female, actually, that we have met in the last year to build a tiny house. She was preceded, of course, by Macy Miller of Many Motives, and then by Christy Wolf, who actually doesn't have a name for a tiny house that I know of. So, or maybe she does. Does she? I don't know.
It
has something to do with prairie, doesn't it? Little tiny house.
Yeah, it's a tiny house on a prairie.
Yeah, that's right. Oh. That's right. So that's the second Idahoan, and then the third one here, of course, will be Stacy. So hey, let's give Stacy a ring-a-ling-a-ling and see what she's up to.
Sounds awesome.
Stacy, are you there? Are you on the line with us?
Hi. I'm here.
Excelente. Glad that you could make it today. I've already told everyone that we're talking with Stacy Whitcomb of Just a Smidgeon.
Smidgeon, spelled like pigeon. It's S-M-I-D-G-E-O-N, because there's a couple ways to do that.
Yeah, totally, but it would be absolutely no fun if I said smidgen. So I have to say smidgeon. It's a smidgeon.
There you go.
But for all of you folks out there,
French.
It is smidgen, but it is spelled S-M-I-D-G-E-O-N, and you'll see that reflected on... You'll see that reflected on the blog post that coincides with this podcast. So look for that, and you can be taken directly to her site. But enough of that. Stacy, let's move on, shall we? We were just saying a second ago that you are the third Idahoan woman that we've met this year building or who has built a tiny house. I want to ask
true.
Idaho
true.
Represent, for real. Now, Stacy, I do want
to
ask...
Well, and Boise, too, right? Because it's Christy and Nacy and me, all in Boise, right?
Well, is Christy actually in Boise? I thought she was maybe a little outside of Boise.
She's just outside of Boise.
But does it matter? I mean, nobody knows anything about Idaho except Boise. So, as far as I'm concerned, you all live in Boise.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, no, Christy's not very far away.
Gotcha. So let me ask you this. Yeah. Would you say that it's because of the consumption of potatoes? Does it give y'all superhuman strength and determination?
I don't know if our builds were necessarily potato-powered.
Gotcha. Well, you know.
I'm not sure about that. But I don't know what it is. I don't know why it's just three women in Idaho. Busting out tiny houses. Got me.
I don't know, but I did say something earlier about the Oprah Network, and I'm now thinking that a brilliant movie would be Three Women in Their Idaho Tiny Houses, or Idaho's Three Women, or something of that nature. The story of three women from Idaho who build tiny houses on trailers.
That would be cool, because they are really cool women.
Well,
I
agree. I mean, I have this picture of, like, your hair up in buns, you're wearing long skirts and, like, some granny-type boots, and you're just out there building houses like the Amish or something.
Yeah.
I'm
you met
it.
Us?
I'm loving it.
We're not anywhere close to Amish.
I'm totally loving it. I know what all of you look like, and I would rather you not spoil my Amish vision here. Enough of other people. Let's focus just on you, Stacy Whitcomb, with your Just a Smidgen. Now, there are a few gaps that Laura and I weren't able to pick up, and so I'm worried that maybe the listeners at home were not able to pick up, which, wait a second, I just had a second thought. Laura, I always say listeners at home. It never occurred to me, maybe they're not listening from their homes.
Maybe they're not. That's actually, like, crazy existential stuff.
It really is. I'm gonna have to take a pause, y'all. I'll get back on the line later. I need to go think about this. But for the sake of the interview, for those of you listening at home, there are some gaps. Stacy, how did you get this tiny house thing in your head? Where did it come from for you?
Well, to be completely candid and honest, I, like so many people, had a big house and got chewed up and spit out during the recession. And I remember, honestly, Christy Wolf did a, this thing is called Ignite Boise. And it's kind of like TED Talks. Mm-hmm. And it's something like 15 slides, 2 minutes, whatever. So they do a presentation. Christy did a presentation years ago on her tiny house build. And I thought, yeah, you know, that's pretty cool. And she has this thing where she lives life based on experiments or, you know, life experiments. And it just kind of rang with me and I remembered it. So down the line, a couple years down the line, so I'm a massage therapist and I was I had gone bankrupt because of the recession, gone bankrupt, and it was looking at losing my house. And I thought, well, how can you make losing your house fun? And so I started planning the tiny house build, thinking that I was going to lose the big house. And long story short, ultimately, the big house sold. The market bounced enough in Boise that I actually sold the big house and was able to pay for the tiny house with the proceeds.
Wow. So, that's like a success ending. Story in itself.
That is a
that's
good,
fantastic.
Happy ending.
Yeah. 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 It's great. It was just perfect. Perfect. So, and it all happened perfect in perfect timing. Like, I've spent this year just saying, man, it just feels like I've just won the lottery in a million ways. Like,
oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Things have gotten so, so good. So, well, yeah, know, it's a happy ending.
It, this Ignite Boise thing, Lord, when we talked to Kara Schultz a few weeks back, didn't she do an Ignite event somewhere?
Yep, she did Ignite Minneapolis, and I've been involved in Ignite Atlanta and Ignite Asheville. It's
I was just thinking, maybe
the
they don't have Ignite in my side of the state, because if they did, people would think it was like a moonshine event.
We should start it, Jim, because you can bring it to your community.
I don't like to share, though. I mean, I seriously, oh. I would only ignite myself and allow others to listen. so I probably wouldn't be very good at that. But no, there probably is one in Raleigh. I could probably search one out. I'm sure there's one in Raleigh. It would only make sense to have one there.
Oh, I'm sure there is, yeah.
But yeah. Laura's heard me publicly speak, and I'm not all that great, so I would not nominate myself for any sort of public speaking at all in front of people about tiny house things. I might actually turn people back to McMansions. Who knows? yeah, I mean, it's possible. It's definitely possible. So, well, I just want to say congratulations to you, because that's just a tremendous story. And what I love best about it is that it sounds to me like when the market did bounce back and the house sold and you actually had a little bit of profit, you could have very easily fell hook, line, and sinker back into that hole. You could have used it for a down payment to pick up a slightly smaller mortgage and get back into kind of a traditional house environment. But you didn't. You stuck to what seriously seemed to be a passion of yours, and that's fantastic, because I think that's proof in the pudding for naysayers who say, you know, the only people that live in tiny houses are people who can't afford to do anything else. And you obviously have you know, your story proves that wrong, as do so many others, but that really is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think that everything that happened to me shaped the decision to build the tiny house and to have, you know, to live this lifestyle now. So there is that element to that. I mean, I've really gone over this in my head a lot, thinking about how the media shapes the tiny housers. And it's like you just said, you know, oh, that's just because they can't afford to live like everybody else. Well, you know, definitely what happened to me shaped why I am where I am right now. But but I don't think, you know, everything's in degrees. I think we can take this minimalistic lifestyle approach to, you know, too far or not far enough, or, you know, it just depends on what people are comfortable with and how much you can change.
Right.
So that's been really great for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think another question that probably people are concerned or have wonder about is, are you still in Boise?
No. So, you know, kind of selling the big house was my ticket to freedom again, which was great, because I've been in the foster therapist for like 15 years and wanted to go back to school.
Okay, time out. You've been a massage therapist for 15 years. On your videos, you look like you're a day over 21. What are you talking about, 15 years?
Right. Keep it rolling, Drew. Keep it rolling.
Hey,
you're doing good.
I didn't score a beautiful wife on nothing, mind you.
So anyway, I had wanted to go to Chinese medical school for a long time, just couldn't get out of my house or out of Boise, and was stuck in that situation for like 5 to 7 years. So as soon as the house sold, I applied again to Oriental Medical School here in Portland and was accepted, which made our build time shortened by like a year and 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of my build too. Yeah, so we busted it out in 4 months.
Yeah, your build is quite possibly one of the quickest I've ever seen in my life. Everyone who listens to the show and who's read my story knows that my build lasted from, you know, like when I was in the third grade till just last week or something.
Y'all
did, and we were privileged enough to see kind of those weeks unfold on your YouTube videos, and it seemed like every YouTube video, it was almost a different house altogether because it came together so smoothly for you. I want to ask you about that. During that part of the process, was there any part where you really got, you know, kind of frustrated, or you thought to yourself, maybe this was not the right step to make, or did you always just feel really encouraged, like you were definitely doing what you're supposed to be doing?
No, I knew that I was doing exactly what I was supposed to be doing. I actually took my work week down to just doing massage 2 days a week and then spent every single day, other than that, this summer working on the house. And to me, it felt awesome. I loved it. And that's not to say that, you know, I didn't screw up and get irritated and cry and frustrated like so many, well, quite frankly, probably everybody else too. But I was also, like I said, I felt like I won the lottery in a million ways. I was gifted. My friend's husband, Mark, offered to help me, and he's a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like while I did partake in, you know, so much of the build, I felt like I was more of an apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he taught me so, so much. And he said to me one day, because he was leaving, and I had this huge project that I had to do on my own, and I just knew I was going to screw it up. And I'm like, I'm scared to start. And he goes, you know what, don't worry about it. No matter what you do, I can fix it. If you screw it up, I can fix it. Don't worry about it. Just get it done.
I always
had that. That was such a huge gift to me.
Totally.
You know? There wasn't anything that I couldn't screw up too badly that he couldn't fix. So that was great. Yeah, it was a huge gift.
I can totally empathize with that. I mean, I get exactly what you're saying and how much encouragement that gives you. Pretty much every morning when I wake up and I come out to my tiny office, one of the last things that my wife says to me is, don't worry about it. No matter what you screw up today, I can fix it. And I know exactly what you mean. It's great encouragement. But the build, I mean, looking at the videos and that sort of stuff, your tiny house, it's just beautiful. I mean, it really is a vision. I mean, it came out, you've got some interesting things, and that's what I think Laura and I want to talk about next, is some of the interesting components in your house, because, you know, one of the things that we talk about on a regular basis is how much each tiny house build we see at this point kind of pushes the envelope of what the aesthetic of a tiny house is. And I think considering yours has basically no wood on the outside of it, that pushes the envelope a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about the exterior. Tell us about the outside of your house.
The exterior is corrugated metal and sheet metal. And so it looks kind of like, it sort of looks like an Airstream if you look at the way that we drilled it all in and drilled it together.
Because you used basically screws that had the rubber washer on them to make sure that there was, So those probably are very similar in appearance right now to like pop rivets that they would have used post-World War II. And you've got a lot of long lines because I think you ran them vertical, top down. So you've got nice large panels of metal separated only by these screws that are probably color coded to match.
Exactly. The screws are colored to match. And we put Volchem, which is a waterproof caulking, in between each layer because they overlap.
Mm hmm.
And then they're also made so that they're like fish scales. So when you're driving down the road and if it's raining, the water hits it and doesn't go into the house.
Oh, wow.
It's like a fish. So it's shoved off the side of it.
Now, what gave you that idea? Where did you get that from?
Honestly, let's see here. It's not my style to have a cabin, put it that way, to start with. like, that's just not my style. I'm more modern art. I'm an artist, so it's kind of more modern, and I wanted something more modern looking. And Mark mm-hmm. has built houses and, remodeled houses, and that's kind of a trend in the big houses, is this sheet metal look in the mm-hmm. metal roof. And so we started talking about it, and he was like, yeah, we can do this. And so, honestly, the edges, one corner of these are scalloped. He scalloped mm-hmm. every single edge. And then he just knew, like, he was like, oh, well, we'll do it like fish scale, because when we went, he knew. He did it that way. He thought of that. I mm. thought of the design. Like, for most of my house, what I did was I drew up the floor plan. I knew what I wanted. And then just, like, consulting with a contractor, you know, said, is this possible? Is this doable? And then talked about, you know, the pros and cons and ramifications of doing things a certain way.
Right.
So,
well, you bring up a really interesting point, and I want to stop you there for a sec. You bring up a really interesting point, and that is, you're an artist. We know, you know, you knew kind of at the time of the build that you were headed towards the Portland area. You kind of had seen some other, probably seen some other Portland tiny houses, that sort of thing. It's interesting to me now, Laura, the further we get into the tiny house movement, the more, I guess, architectural stylings have to do with the regionalism of the tiny house.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, my tiny house is fit for Eastern North Carolina. You can look at my house and tell that we live, you know, just a spit away from the beach. It looks like a beach cottage. Laura, yours mm-hmm. looks like you could walk back in time 100 years to the mountains, and that cabin is sitting there from that time period. You know, and the list.
And we did that on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. The list could go on and on and on. I think it's so incredible, and I wish more municipalities and more legislators would recognize that we actually are going out of our way to build homes that fit in with the environment that we're putting them in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so I think that's really interesting, Stacey, because if you were to bring that house to where I am, I think it would stick out like a sore thumb. And almost cause you more headache than anything else, because it wouldn't be as humbly received as perhaps it would be in a more progressive area like the Pacific Northwest or something like that.
Well, the blue definitely makes a statement. I don't think you could put that thing anywhere where it's not going to stand out. You couldn't sneak that into the woods at all. You know, that little sucker is going to stand out wherever you put it. But That's kind of my flair anyway. Like I really kind of dig just cool things that stand out. So
for
the blue
sure.
was a big thing.
For sure.
Even the blue was a big deal. It was gutsy. It was really gutsy. So, but you know, I don't know. You are making a good point that, you know, we actually really kind of are building these things to where we live too. And, like mine's, I sprayed insulation in there, and mm-hmm. the R value is crazy, you know. So now that I'm in Portland, so, and I did that because at the time, well, you never know where you're going to live.
Right.
So whether it's cool or hot or whatever, I mean, that's where most of my money went. As far as the big chunks that went out, my insulation was crazy.
Right.
It cost more than the trailer itself, the
right.
flatbed itself.
Right. Well, and I think,
but,
too, when we did our house, you know, We got some flack from people kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum from what you're saying. We got some flack regarding, you know, folks saying, oh, you know, you should use better insulation, you know, under your flooring, and, you know, the window, you should use triple pane windows or something like that. When, you know, in our opinion, yes, we built our tiny house trailer for the option of mobility, but God willing, and the creek don't rise, we ain't leaving the Southeast. So it's not like, we're going to wake up to, you know, 4 months of snow.
Right.
So it is interesting. It's very interesting about that. And I can understand why you would put so much budget in insulation. You, for the, at least the foreseeable future, are going to be in a place where that insulation is probably going to be your best investment of the build.
Right. Exactly. It's not so much of a big deal here in Portland, but in Boise, it freezes quite a bit. So, you know, and honestly, right now, I'm just heating it with a space heater. And I think, honestly, that I can get away with that all winter.
Right.
So,
Well, when you're only, yeah, you're only heating so much space. You don't need that much heat. You don't need that much energy to heat it. So I think you can get away with it most of the winter.
It's so energy efficient that I get up in the morning and I go run and I come back in and there's a thermostat on the space heater and I'll come in the house and I'll be in the house for like 5 minutes and the whole entire temperature of the house increases by like 4 or 5 degrees.
Because you're bringing body heat in, is that correct?
Yeah, totally. Isn't that crazy? Within 5 minutes, I heat the house up 5 degrees.
No,
it's pretty cool.
I totally understand that. I think that's why my house smells the way it does. When I walk in, it's like 3 minutes later, it stinks everywhere. It's horrible. No, honestly, I want to talk, you know, talking about the insulation and that sort of stuff. You said when you come in from a run, one of the things that I noticed, and maybe this was on a Facebook picture, maybe it was Instagram, I can't quite remember where, but it was a picture of your commute and your bicycle. And so I wanted to ask you about that. Now that you have moved into that region, are you finding less dependency on individual, you know, transportation like a car or a truck or something like that? I know you speak very affectionately of your truck, which is funny. You say it's 20 years old. That's like brand new where I'm from. You speak so affectionately of it, but are you finding yourself, your whole lifestyle now changing, becoming more minimalist or more conscious about your consumption, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Okay, so that's a really good thing. So I've only lived in the tiny house for, 7 weeks now? And it's not finished, but it's so great. I can't wait to get it up. But yes, my whole life has changed since moving to Portland. And I mean, I'm a cyclist anyway, and I rode my bike in Boise, but I didn't really commute anywhere on my bike. I did it for recreation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because Portland is, it's just a whole different world here. Like,
right.
Because it's so set up for public transportation,
mm-hmm.
I no longer, and my school is in the city, it's in Chinatown, so, and I'm not outside, but I'm like 6 miles from school.
Right.
I have been riding my bike to school, so I spent money setting my bike up to make it, my mountain bike, to make it a commuter bike,
mm-hmm.
and bought the waterproof bags and everything, and so that picture was from yesterday, yeah. And that was on Facebook. That was my personal page. But I can repost that on Just a Smidgen. It's so much better. I jumped on the bus today, and I took the train to school today, and I was listening to a TED Talk, and I can't remember who the guy was, so maybe I'll link it to you guys later. But he was talking about urban sprawl and, you know, obesity and the link, and he used Portland as an example of a city that dumped so much money into public transportation as opposed to building more freeways. And it was so funny because I randomly chose that podcast. And I was like, well, yeah, this is cool. And last night, because, you know, the time changed. So when I left school last night, it's pitch blackout. And I have lights. But the public transportation in Portland hired people, and they were hanging out at the corners where most cyclists cross the street, and they were handing out blinky lights and reflective stickers.
Okay.
You know? Wow, that's awesome.
I pretty much live in this boondocks. I've never even heard
I know.
Of such. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm thinking about is, like, if you like, look up in the sky and you kind of look towards the southeast, you can see the glare, or the glow, rather, from the Food Lion parking lot. That's about all we have to help pedestrians guide themselves through city streets.
Yeah. So that, it's, you know, for this city, like, oh, gosh, this city is just amazing that way. And I think that's the draw of the tiny housers to this city, too, you know. And,
I can certainly understand. And it always makes me wonder what the future of rural-bound tiny houses are, because it is a pretty big fight. But I'm also, and this is interesting, Laura, this is a talk that we need to have at some point, because I'm really starting to come to some conclusion about how tiny houses, and I'm not talking about small footprints, I'm talking about tiny houses, so we'll say, you know, 300 square feet and less, are actually not the most suitable for a rural lifestyle. I'm coming to that conclusion. And I've got some interesting points to back that up, so we can talk about that sometime. The lifestyle is just so different that it doesn't really, it doesn't work well with a tiny house in the traditional sense. And you can imagine why, and we can talk about it later, but I want to remember that topic. I don't want to take up Stacey's time talking about that. What I do want to ask you, though, Stacey, is I know that you bought a used trailer, I want you to real quickly weigh in on that experience. For every person that we have on the show, you know, we get a different story. For those people who got a used trailer, they say, oh, I would never spend the money on a brand new trailer. And for those people with a brand new trailer, they say, oh, I would never, you know, get a used trailer for this type of project or something like that. Stacey, what is your thought on it, having had a used trailer?
Well, so this is another place where I really felt like I left out and kind of won the lottery of just another point. A good friend of mine is a firefighter, and one of his buddies had purchased trailers in the past and kind of really knew his stuff. And so I didn't know him. I called him. I asked him if he would help me. He totally did. He drove, we drove his truck because my truck's not going to pull a flatbed. He went over that thing for an hour, looking at every little, at the welds, and then we made sure it was square, and then he made sure that the axles were fine and the wheels were fine, and it was a really great experience, honestly. And then I talked the guy down in price, mm-hmm. So, and my flatbed trailer is amazing. So I wouldn't suggest that you just go out and buy a used trailer. I think that's your foundation. What it is truly the most important part of, the beginning. Like you can't buy a piece of crap and build on it. It's not a good idea. If you have something nice, it will last forever. It should last longer than you. So, I think it's important. So, just make sure you know what you're doing if you're going to buy a used trailer.
Yeah, definitely. So tell us about the size. What is the size of your trailer? And did you use a blueprint or is it your own design?
It's an 8x20 and I drew up my own floor plan.
Gotcha. So tell us a little bit about the features of the interior space.
Well, I kind of wanted an open floor plan, for lack of better ways of explaining it. I didn't want a galley kitchen because I love to cook. So I'm not going to say my kitchen is similar to yours, but as far as all of the tiny houses out there, Drew, probably our kitchens are the most similar.
You mean they're usable? Oh! I'm joking, people.
I made an open floor plan, so the kitchen is at one end and the bathroom is at the other end. And then in between, I have, it's important to me to have kind of a full-size type couch. So I have, 7-foot couch in case I'm sick or people, stay over. I also have a lot of storage space. I was looking at it today just thinking, man, I have so much more crap than those tiny housers because I have built those faucets. All of the water runs inside of the house, not in the walls.
Right.
So it runs through those soffits that come off of the ceiling, and that created more storage space.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's
very cool. That was kind of the deal. Yeah, that was the deal. But technically, running water at both ends of the house is probably a little more than a beginner tiny house or thing to do. Same thing with the sheet metal on the outside.
Your water situation is something I would not recommend to someone without experienced help. I try and tell people, keep all your water, keep all your plumbing fixtures on the same side. It's easier to do. It's less expense in terms of materials, that sort of stuff. However, there are, as we've lived in ours, there are some very unique ways that I can think of building them that would utilize, kind of split plumbing systems running all through the house.
Right. So, it's not super complicated, but it's not beginner,
You're in a sleeping loft, right?
I do have a sleeping loft. And then there's a loft above the bathroom, too, where you could put a camp mat up there and sleep up there, too, if somebody else was there. Yeah.
That's great.
That is one of the things that I honestly think that I might have goofed a little bit. My ceiling in my kitchen, because I love to cook and I wanted space in there. I think that I chewed up too much space in my loft.
Yeah.
So I threw my queen bed up there, and I can't tell you, I bang my head on the ceiling every day.
Yeah, that's...
I do every, though. every day.
Well, you know, people often assume that because we're on a single level that we don't have any, you know, sleeping or bed issues or something. That's not true either. You know, since we redid our daughter's bed to where it kind of lofts, half lofts over our bed. Does this ring a bell? Do any of y'all remember the pictures of this? So we basically took her bed and we literally fastened it to the wall. So it overlaps our bed by about a foot. And then underneath of her bed is where our closet now is, instead of the stand-up closet that we did have. So it's kind of a hidden closet space. So it works very well for the sleeping part, but it makes it very difficult to actually get to the closet space. You kind of have to, I always say stop, drop, and roll to get there. And then to make the bed, it's very difficult to make the bed and change the sheets and that sort of stuff. So, you know, I don't know if in a tiny house there's ever going to be an ideal sleeping situation. But the thing you have to remember, and the thing I try and encourage people to remember, is that when all is said and done, it's just that, folks. It's sleeping. I mean, you know, I understand that there are other things you can do in the bed, and that's great. But those things should not be limited to one's mattress. Those things should, you know, obviously have domain in other areas, to put it delicately. So, you know, when all is said and done, it is just the sleeping. And so you have to think about that. Am I able to lay down posturpedically in a comfortable, restful position for, you know, 6 to 8 hours a night? If you can answer yes, then congratulations. You have a good sleeping spot for yourself.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal. It really isn't. And it's, you know, I don't know if I would necessarily change it because I really do love my kitchen. So it's fine. I just need to buy a different mattress, something that's a little thinner, because I've got like a pillow top.
Right. And see, that's why we went with the single level, because we have a sleep number extended queen, and we did not want to sacrifice even a millimeter of that mattress. So we had to think of something alternative, so to speak, that would allow us to keep that mattress. So, great point there. Real quick, I just want to wrap up with a couple of quick questions, and these are kind of just simple answers. Are you on-grid or off-grid in terms of power?
I am on-grid with power.
Gotcha. Now, what about water? Do you have holding tanks, or do you plug into, like, a RV sewer system?
So, currently, because we had to, I'll say this fast, because I know we're ending, but currently, because I had to winterize, and that just kept getting more and more expensive, I just unscrewed the hose and said, forget it. I just won't have running water. So what's cool about that is that where I'm living, she's got a rain barrel. Mm-hmm. So I'm using water off of the rain barrel, and I have a flush toilet. Using water off the rain barrel. And then I have a sewer line that goes into, she's got an RV set up, and it goes into the driveway, into the sewer. So not into the, you know what I'm saying, right, in a hose, right, into the, so I have a sewer, so I have a flush toilet, and I'm running on like 4 gallons of rainwater a day and less than a gallon of fresh water.
That's fantastic. Wow. That really is.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's just kind of, it was an experiment kind of, you know, I was like, well, this winterizing thing is turning into like I just can't afford it right now, starting school and having moved. So we'll just unplug it all and see what happens. And so I've been that way for about a week. And there's a shower at school, and I have gyms, and I have friends, and, you know, it's fine. It's really fine. It's
kind of actually cool. That goes back to when you choose to live a lifestyle like this, or you choose to live a quote-unquote non-traditional lifestyle, you have to make concessions for it. And they're not end-of-the-world concessions. They're things that, you know, you just do differently from what people have told us in the American dream we're supposed to be doing.
Right. Yeah. Well, my friends at school, like a few of them I've told now, they're like, what? You don't have running water? Oh my God. And they're like, wow, it's not that big of a deal.
Oh,
you know,
I do
all of the same things that you guys do too. Like it's still functional. I just don't have a hose coming into your house. Yeah. Who cares?
It's the same when people say, oh my God, you have to walk outside to go to the bathroom. Yes, I certainly do. And it really makes me consider how long I want to stand out there under the shower when it's 40 degrees outside. So I guess in the long term, it's a quality decision.
There are, and it's quality of life decisions. And, you know, I thought about it the other day when I was filling those gallon tanks, and I was like, yeah, or my gallon jugs, it took 7 minutes. And I thought, well, there went 7 minutes, and, yep. You know, other people just turned their faucet on. But you know what? I'm not paying for water now.
That's
so
right.
That's cool.
That's right.
Right.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Well, look, ladies and gentlemen out there in the Revo Convo world, we have been talking with Stacey Whitcomb today of Just a Smidgen. You can find her probably most popularly on her YouTube channel. She's got, video after video of her building process. And Stacey, we hope now that you're in Portland, maybe you'll do an update video soon of what life is like in your tiny house. Show us your new digs. And you can also find her at www.justasmidgen.com. That's JustASmidgeon.com. You'll see all of those links in the blog post that goes along with this podcast episode. Stacey, on behalf of the Revo Convo and, of course, Tiny Revolution, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's been great. Really great. Thank you.
Absolutely. Laura, did you want to say anything in closing? I have really just talked right over you today.
No, it's always just fine. No,
it's always like that. What's new? Awesome. Well, look, Stacey, thank you so much. And if there's ever anything the Revo Convo can do for you, please just let us know. Otherwise, Portland. Enjoy your lottery winnings. We hope you have a wonderful, wonderful time in Portland.
Oh, I am. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right. Pretty awesome. That was, Laura, that was one of the more enjoyable conversations that I've had. Not to say that any of the others have not been enjoyable, but that was just pretty awesome because I think probably the largest reason is because I had not known very much about her project before kind of researching for this interview. And I didn't know Stacey. I hadn't talked to her, hadn't met her. So, you know, it was kind of one of those getting to know you sort of scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to learn about her tiny house through the conversation, you know, as opposed to on the blog.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, since now that we've talked to her, I'm going to go back and look at some of her videos and see some of the things she was talking about. But I can very clearly see in my head what the exterior of her house looks like. And it is really just simply unique. And I hope people take the time now that they've heard her voice and heard her story. I hope people take the time to really look at her house and watch some of those videos on her YouTube channel, because she really did a nice job of putting those together.
Absolutely.
You know, speaking of putting things together, I am, I'm starting a second book, Laura. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm starting a second book, and it's about kind of marketing, marketing your tiny house, marketing your tiny house project, that sort of thing. Because a lot of people have emailed me and asked me, you know, how do you do this? How do you do that? How do you get a sponsor? How do you get donations? And, you know, there's a big difference between donations and sponsorship. There's a very big difference. And so I want to really touch on that. And so I thought probably the best way to do it was to write a book. But the reason I mention that is because I've been continuing to talk to Guillaume from Tiny House Giant Journey that we interviewed last week. And, you know, one of the things he was asking me about was, you know, kind of when we started our website and how we got into the podcast and all that sort of stuff. And a lot of people know, and they've heard me say that, you know, Crystal just has no interest in any of this. It's not her thing. You know, she's the brains behind the operation and I'm the mouthpiece, and that's the way we work. And, so although she has very strong opinions and we talk about things for the blog offline and we talk about the podcast and she actually listens to the podcast, she's not around when I do a lot of this stuff. And he was asking me when we started the website. And one of the things I realized, you know, we've only been living in our tiny house for just that 11 months full time. And so, you know, a good part of 3 years in having our community was really built around just all the steps that it took to get to the building process. I mean, we took our community through every single choice, decision, option, pitfall, pratfall, fallback, you know, the whole works. We walked through it with them. And so it's very interesting to think about how we got all this going. And, you know, for someone like Stacy, I think it's very interesting too, because, you know, she's kind of done a week by week update. And that's why I challenged her to kind of give us an update on where she's at now, because I think, and one of the reasons I like your site is the adventure, it doesn't end when you move into the house. I mean, to me, that's kind of the beginning of the adventure part, because there's so much to learn when you just move in.
Absolutely. You know, we had a very similar experience with that. You know, it took us 3 years to build. We were blogging the whole time. And, you know, it didn't end once we moved in, even though then it was just our house. You know, and it mm-hmm. seemed like it wasn't as much a novelty anymore.
Yeah. And that's another thing that I think you and I are going to have to touch on soon, is this novelty of the tiny house. Because, you know, for us, it's reality. It's not a novelty anymore. And I actually told someone today or yesterday or something, I'm kind of tired of saying the word tiny. like, I must say the word 200 times a day, whether it be out of necessity or be out of choice. I say it so much that I'm really starting to lose kind of perspective on what the word even means. It's like the American culture being obsessed with the word love. We actually mm-hmm. assign the word love to intimate relationships and cheeseburgers all at the same time.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't bode well for your significant other when you say to them, I love you. And then 10 minutes later, you're saying, I love cheeseburgers. What?
Right.
So are you suggesting that I am on par with a cheeseburger?
I don't know. I think
that's something we'll have to talk about at some point very soon. It's just this whole kind of obsession with tiny and micro and small and that sort of thing. I mean, you know, I don't really hear McMansion people sitting around and talking about
how huge their house is.
They just say, we live in a big house. Okay, great. We live in a small house. Yay. So
exactly.
I think we've got a couple of good topics coming up in the next few weeks that may not have anything to do with interviews. They may, who knows? And I think it's probably a safe bet to say that, you know, between Thanksgiving and Christmas, we'll probably only put out about one podcast. Because
right.
if we are living our lives correctly, the schedule will not allow for a ton of recording.
Right.
So anyway, well, I'm kind of done. I'm kind of done yakking for this episode of the Revo Convo. Did you have anything you wanted to add? Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to tell the people to get off their pocketbook strings for?
Well, of course, I always want to promote my book, but no, I will just let people find that as they
Well,
may.
Tell me, how is the book going? I'd like to hear, how's the book going, you think?
So far, so good. Had a lot of really great reviews on Amazon, and I've been selling them, you know, pretty regularly.
That's awesome.
So
have you gotten kind of some email feedback from people saying, oh my gosh, you missed my favorite, number 124?
I haven't yet, but I have had a lot of people tell me that their favorite part are the recipes. So I'm thinking about doing a tiny house cookbook.
Oh, that would be awesome. Well, you know, it is cool because I had never thought about putting green pepper on my egg sandwich before. I mean, in all the years I've been eating what I call the my mom's name is Debbie, and she used to make like these knockoff egg McMuffins for breakfast. So I always call them the mm-hmm. Debbie McMuffin. Mm-hmm. All those years of eating Debbie McMuffins, I never once thought about putting green pepper on it. And so when I saw that recipe, I was like, a little sauteed pepper and onion would be just fantastic on that sandwich.
It absolutely would.
Well, look, if you decide to do that, I think it'd be cool, too, if you ask for some submissions from folks. Maybe some folks would like to submit some recipes. Crystal's got a few up her sleeve, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and like a community tiny house cookbook could be really, really fun. Now the gears are turning.
Interesting. Well, I like that idea. And of course, your book, you know, I want everybody to buy a copy of your book. It's a really entertaining look at y'all's experience and well-priced, too. And I believe I got an email today. Ryan Mitchell, who wrote Cracking the Code, he's released a version 2.0 of the book that has a 14-page toolkit in it, talking more about code-specific updates. So mm-hmm.
folks may want to check that out, of course. And that's all. Although I wouldn't be surprised if someone comes out with a Tiny House Caroling book anytime now. So,
that's a good idea. Too.
Carols for the Tiny House. God rest ye micro gentlemen or something like that. I don't know. How quickly I came up with that?
That's brilliant.
I know. Away in the sleeping loft. Yeah. Anyway, enough from me. Let's can this one. Let's put a fork in it. We're done.
All right.
So, hey, we'll see you next time, Laura. Thank you, as always, for co-hosting this amalgam of a broadcast with me. And for those of you out there listening, please do check up on our guest today, Stacey Whitcomb. Find out more about her Just a Smidgen Tiny House. You'll see the links in the blog post that coincides with this podcast. As always, I am one half of your hosting team here at the Revo Convo. I am Andrew Odom of tinyrevolution.us, and...
And I am the other half of your hosting team, Laura Lavoie of 120squareFeet.com.
Awesome. Take care, guys. We'll see you in the next podcast.